Good morning, and welcome to CERAWeek 2020 Conversations, presented by IHS Market. I'm Larry Makovich, and with me today is Chris Crane, President and CEO of Exelon Corporation. Good morning, Chris.
Morning, Larry. How are you doing?
Good. I thought we could talk a little bit about the impact of the COVID-19 breakout on the power business in general, how that's affecting how the business is run in both the short and the long run with regard to investment and cash flows, and then shift the discussion to the longer term where we think about how this is going to play out with the climate, as well as how this is going to play out with the wholesale market evolution. So thanks, and let's start with this question of the COVID impact on the business. The COVID-19 outbreak is the reason we're doing this over the web instead of face-to-face in early March in Houston, as you've done for many years at CERAWeek. There's been a lot of attention to grocery workers and the frontline people in hospitals, but I haven't heard a lot about the people that have kept the lights on. And it makes me think that if we had any kind of outages during this kind of crisis, it would certainly be a big problem. Do you think people, the general public, kind of take it for granted that the lights will stay on in a crisis like this?
You know, we have very high percentage of reliability, and we have high customer satisfaction numbers at our utilities. I don't think the customers take it for granted. We've had storms before where customers are baking stuff when their power comes back on, bringing it out to the linemen. We have been able to work with the government and local agencies to stress the criticality of our employees, not only for the availability of PPE, but the continued access in the stay-at-home orders. And also, we've done a lot of advancement in getting some prioritization on testing for not only the Exelon utilities, but through the Electric Sector Security Council, working with the government, getting the recognition that our folks have to stay safe also.
Right. You know, I know you came up through the nuclear side of the business, and that's a culture that usually thinks a lot about low probability, high impact kind of events like this COVID-19 outbreak. When you did your risk assessments corporate-wide, did you have a scenario like a COVID that you'd already thought through?
Yes, definitely. If you go back to the bird flu, we had not seen for a very long time a potential international pandemic, or pandemic which is international. So we had done a lot of planning back at that stage on how to manage through a situation like that. We, like many other utilities, created crisis management teams. And we stood those teams up and had them on the ready, not only for this, but for other major events. Every day at 4 p.m. Eastern, we have about 65 people on the call going through our checklist and making sure, first of all, we get the health report out. We know how many positives, how many have to be quarantined, what are we doing to help in disinfecting areas, that type of thing. So it was within days we had the playbook totally in works, and then also communicating very closely with our state, local, and federal officials on what we're doing, keeping the elected officials informed, but keeping all the critical services aligned with us so they're aware of what we need or what we are doing.
So that certainly seems to be quite a testament to thinking these kind of things through, even though they're not something that's very likely to happen. As you look back on it now with what you've gone through, was there anything that was overlooked or anything that surprised you with how this has played out?
You know, the biggest issue we had, a lot of PPE on hand. Some of it actually dated back to the bird flu. But our capability of sourcing, while we're competing with other critical infrastructures, hospitals, first responders, and trying to source enough material to keep our folks safe so they can execute their job has been more difficult than we anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
We would not get caught short like this again. We had an order in with a very big supplier at the 1st of January when we started to catch on that there was something going on in China. And that order was for 1.2 million N95 masks. I think we're going to get about 80,000.
Wow.
We've been sourcing from some very reliable candidates. We've had offers from what we found are not reliable candidates. So just making sure that we've got that part intact. The rest of it is just working right off the playbook, and the whole company, the whole corporation and the individual companies are executing very well. We're performing refueling outages where we have over 1,000 people on a site, doing the work to ready the reactor for another 2 years. We had all the equipment for thermal testing. We had all the equipment for separation. We've been able to enact all of that, but the sourcing of materials has probably been the hardest thing.
Interesting. So, when we look back across the past decade, the economy grew at about 1.7% a year, but electricity demand really didn't go up very much. It's been pretty flat. Even though 2018 was kind of an all-time high on output, there's been this idea that we've had a delinking of electric use and economic activity. But with this very sudden downturn in economic activity, you're seeing real impact on consumption?
Oh, definitely. Not only in our regions, but across the country. I think the latest data we've seen is anywhere from 3 to 10% in regional basis. PJM and MISO are our main ISOs. It's definitely right at 10% now. But through our Constellation organization, we have our retail wholesale group. We've gone out to our large industrial and commercial customers to try to project their load profiles. We're seeing in that sector, which is different from residential this time, in that sector, we're seeing up to 15% reduction. So we're watching it very closely. 7 weeks is hard to say we've got a trend, but we're trying to obtain all the data that we can from the ISOs, from our own meter information to understand the reaction and can we correlate this to 08. I don't think we're going to be able to correlate it to 08, but we'll have to see as time goes on what the full demand destruction is. There are reports that 4,900 megawatts that were in the queue to build have been suspended. It's going to be tough, especially in the organized markets where they're not designed adequately to support some of the critical resources the states want.
So in that regard, with investment spending, has Exelon itself adjusted its CapEx this year, given what's happened?
We have pulled CapEx back in going into the rest of this year in the nuclear division. We had some non-critical CapEx that would not affect safety, we've pulled back. At this point, we're continuing to spend on the utility side. $5 billion will be going in for critical investments for the consumers in gas, electricity and gas, and $25 billion over the next 5 years to continue to meet the consumer demands.
Now, besides sales being down, I would imagine as well that people aren't paying their electric bills as rapidly as they normally would month to month. And you may even be accumulating some bills that'll never get paid. Having had the experience in 08 with the recession, were you well set up with working capital, access to credit to be able to get through this kind of thing?
We deal with a lot of repo market, commercial paper, the overnight paper, where you used to be able to go into the market and carry it for 10 days. As we saw that market tighten, we were getting some higher rates for a 24-hour loan. And so we took on a strategy. We issued some debt. We had been able to weather it. Now, with the Fed coming in, they've done a great job helping support that market. And so we're not seeing the tightness anymore. On a bad debt, it's something that we're working hard on now in all our jurisdictions. As you can imagine, all our jurisdictions have slightly different recovery mechanisms for bad debt. And at this point, all of our utilities, and we've extended it once, have put a moratorium on disconnects due to bad debt. And we actually even reconnected customers that were disconnected because of bad debt if they desired. That bad debt is building up. We have in all jurisdictions some type of regulatory asset that we're trying to put in place, working with the commissions and working with the stakeholders, that it becomes a cash issue this year more than an earnings issue, but you'll start to be able to recover it. So like ComEd has a true up on an annual basis. PECO goes in for filing, you know, rate case filing, and they do a 3-year average. So it's not going to be as detrimental in the long run, but in the short term, you know, we have to watch it very closely and make sure we've got the right recovery mechanisms in place.
Right. You know, when you talk about the short run, when you talk about the lessons from 08, you know, one of the things that I think was interesting, one of the kind of surprises or unintended consequences back in 08 and 09 was CO2 emissions in the U.S. went down a lot when economic activity went down. I think it's very likely we're going to see something like that this year as well. And of course, they'll come surging back likely when the economy comes back. Do you think this has put a pause on attention to the climate right now that's going to come back when the economy comes back?
I don't think we're going to, you know, right now, the legislature and all the administrations in our states for sure have been focused on the pandemic and the response to the health and safety of the public. I think, you know, you've got 21 governors and how many cities across the country that have made mandates that they want to get to a low carbon environment. Every one of our service territories has done that. So, you know, we have seen the air quality improve with this, no cars on the road. It's kind of creepy here in Chicago. You look out and you see one or two cars go by every once in a while and no gridlock. But we will see a reduction in CO2. But as the economy comes back and we have a greater dependency on natural gas to blend in with nuclear and blend in with the renewables, I would sense that we would have some increase back again. But I think the focus, like Illinois wants to be 100% clean by 2030. They've put that out there. I don't see the governor backing away from that unless this pandemic does something very, very critical and long-term to the economy and the health and safety of the public.
That's interesting because Illinois, and there's another handful of states that already have put on the books these kind of mandates to get to 100% clean out there in 2040 or 2050. You know, when you think about that, do you think that the industry's got the technologies it needs to get there in a cost-effective way that'd be politically tolerable to folks?
You know, the 2030 is going to be a very tough goal to be 100% clean. We do not have, as you know, adequate technology around storage that is a long-term deep storage that can support the grid through periods of no wind and no sun. So there is going to be a dependency for some time on natural gas. I think for the most part, we'll move away from, in most of the country, from coal. The economics of the coal, the old coal units are doing that itself on themselves. So I think we'll be able to get close, but until we have a breakthrough in storage technology or other technologies that can support the distributed or the other renewables, large-scale renewables, it will be difficult.
You know, when people talk about this energy transition future, this topic of decarbonization on electric supply is always a big thing. But the other thing we hear a lot about is a lot broader electrification across the economy. And so one thing that I always see missing from that discussion is, what does that mean for the size of the power business going forward? And have you guys thought much about significant electrification, transportation, or broader in the economy, and what that would mean for the size of the business 20, 30 years from now?
Yeah, it definitely is a very efficient way to continue to clean the environment. You may be able to support some levels of natural gas to keep the system reliable, but you'll have a greater impact if you go to electrification of transportation, electrification, more electrification on the industrial side. So we have been working, as all the utilities have been working, on how do we work with our stakeholders on driving further electrification and get their concepts of how they want to do that so we can enable the distribution or the transmission system to support that. You know, we look at every one of our jurisdictions. Some have pilots already on EVs, charging stations, which is just a start. It's not a big impact yet, but knowing that we can go there and be able to understand the customer needs, the grid needs, and how to support it. Chicago has the third highest issue with respiratory illness. It's behind LA and New York. That causes a great deal of issues, especially in the underserved communities where the trucks are rolling through and the buses are rolling through. You think of our kids sitting on school buses run by diesel, idling there in the parking lot before they're told they can drive out. It's really bad for the health and safety of the public. So we do have good coalitions going forward. There are some projections that you could have greater than a 24% load increase just off of EV by 2050. And we've seen other projections by 2030. But right now what we have to do is gain the support of all, figure out with balance sheets of the municipalities and the states, how do we execute on that? How do we help support execute on that? What strategies will be put in place to be able to not only they can afford the buses, they can afford much more light duty trucks like us, electric vehicles. It's something that we're all working on very hard, and I think it will be beneficial to the environment.
And when you look at the approaches that are being taken to try to implement that vision of an energy transition, a lot of it involves mandates and subsidies of technologies that people think will enable it to happen. One of the things that seems to be happening as well, though, is that mandates and subsidies of renewables and efficiency and load shifting and so forth seems to be at odds with the way that the wholesale markets operate. And it's creating some distortions and lack of harmony between the climate initiatives and running the markets. Do you see that as a problem that's going to be getting bigger in the future? And where does that kind of rank on the agenda? Is it a top 10 problem for the industry going forward?
It is a top 10 for the organized markets. I mean, it's probably number one in the organized markets. The way that the locational marginal pricing was designed was not the way the system runs today. So generators are not being compensated adequately. We have issues with negative prices. Although we've solved some of that in Illinois, you still see that from time to time. So these mandates haven't matched a load profile to the mandate, the necessity on how many megawatts that they want built. And because of that, we've got a distorted market from pricing, and we haven't seen any reliability issues yet, but you have to watch for those. And in some cases, the subsidies for the renewables have really benefited the customers. And it's been a way to jumpstart that. phasing out the PTC and the ITC is the right thing to do. They're not emerging technologies anymore. They're mature technologies, and they've done a very good job on bringing their costs down. So if we can get more of a discipline on saying, okay, I don't need a rooftop solar on every house in Illinois. Let's look at the load profile. Let's look at the physics of the system and figure out how we can make it as clean as possible.
So to do that, there's going to have to be some good thinking and, you know, design changes to the markets and so forth. One of the things that seems to be out there, though, is with stakeholder governance, you tend to get gridlock, and it's very hard to move things forward until you get something like a polar vortex or an outage that forces change. Do you think that the way that the markets are set up with the governance is going to create the kind of timely changes we all need?
I think the states are going to have to take over, especially on capacity, to be able to adequately secure the resources they want. You know, FERC is focused on functioning markets that are the holistic ISO. They want to make sure it's the lowest price provider is out there, and anybody that has a subsidy or compensation for their environmental benefits should be treated differently. Once you do that in an auction, you will still go back to the lowest cost provider, but the lowest cost provider will get a premium because they're bidding up against the marginal, which will be a low carbon output unit.
Right. I think my colleagues at IHS Market would certainly hope that next year this conversation isn't electronic, that we've got you in person down in Houston. You know, when you think about March in Houston next year, I think COVID and what happened will certainly be on the agenda. What other big issues do you think will kind of dominate the Power Day discussions?
You know, I think from the electric sector and the natural gas sector is talking about market designs and ensuring that we can provide adequate, reliable power with the mandates that the states have around clean. Every one of our jurisdictions and our customers, it pulls very high, if not in most jurisdictions, the top. They want us to be responsible for the environment. We cannot be responsible for a market that doesn't compensate around the environment. You know, it's a dirty word or a dirty phrase to go back to a carbon tax, however we put that phrase in. That's the national fix. If we could go there, then you let the markets respond, let technology emerge, and people get compensated for their ability to produce at the low level. But right now, the markets aren't doing it. The administration has not seen that as a priority. And so I think we'll be talking about that, dysfunctional markets and how do we get to our environmental standards that our states and customers want.
Right. Well, that's certainly very helpful for designing CERAWeek 2021. And you've provided us some great insights today on these big issues that we're all facing. And I'd just like to thank you for taking the time and sharing your thoughts with us today.
Great to see you, Larry. Stay safe and enjoy the conversation.
Yeah, you too.